This is Up to Date on KCUR 89.3. I'm Steve Kraske. Whenever Mayor Lucas is in the house, the question always is, where should we begin? There's the police department and homeless and talk of a new downtown baseball stadium. Then there's the bus system and that lid over Interstate 670 downtown. Where to begin? We're about to find out as we welcome Mayor Quentin Lucas back to the show. Mayor, always good to have you in the house.
It's great to be here.
Well, let's start with that Justice Department investigation into the hiring practices in the Kansas City Police Department. The department is going to examine where there's a pattern or practice of racial discrimination in the way it employs people. Mayor, what's your reaction that the department is launching this probe?
Well, you know, I think there are a few different reactions that we should have. First, I think it needs to be welcome. I think we need to do a better job of understanding what are the concerns, particularly of black officers. The Kansas City Star did a very long series about discrimination, at least alleged discrimination within the department. I think the Board of Police Commissioners really has not responded at all to a lot of the questions that were raised, from whistleblower claims to any number of issues, including a black officer that believes he was profiled and stopped by two white officers. So I would hope that the board takes the opportunity to look introspectively at what we've been doing, how we can make sure our own officers are comfortable working with the department, feel like they've been listened to, feel like they're able to get good promotion opportunities. If we are not able to do that, then we need to look to make change.
You know, based on the nearly 4 years that you served on the Board of Police Commissioners, do you think the department has an issue in the way it hires people to be officers on the force?
You know, I think when we hire new officers, we are trying to get anybody available. That said, I think that how you actually promote people, how you retain people, how you punish folks is very important in terms of how the department keeps going. Because the best recruiting tool are usually connections inside the department. And if you have a groundswell of black officers or Latino officers or women who are saying, well, you know, I don't feel like I was able to get the same opportunities as others, as has been claimed, then I think that has a huge impact on our ability to recruit blacks outside of the department now to get new people in.
So you think there might be issues?
I think there might be issues, and I think it is somewhat clear when you hear the preponderance of different issues that are coming up. I think there is, and there has always been largely, a leadership issue. I am not a fan of the board system. I've articulated that before. Given the lack of accountability, these are the sorts of things that fester, and I think it is important we have an outside group that takes a look.
You know, the Star, you mentioned the Star's deep dive into this a few months ago. It found that nearly 30% of the city's residents are black, yet just 12% of officers are black. In the command ranks, the record is even worse. Just 6% of captains are black, the Star found. There were only three black majors at the time. And yet the department has been focused on this as an issue, you know, since the days in the late 80s when I covered police for the Star. And I don't think the numbers were much better at that time. Why can't the department turn this around?
Well, that to me is the biggest problem, right? They should not be the same numbers that you saw in the late 1980s and the early 1990s. There should be a progressing trend. And I am not one of those who simply says, well, that's just who applies. I have a mayor's office right now that is almost all women, almost all women. They are not the only ones who apply. It just so happens that when you're looking for talented people and when you're keeping your eyes open on folks that may not have familial relations, may not be from the same types of groups that you're getting them from, then you can actually get a more diverse pool. That requires you, I think, to be frankly a lot more aggressive as to where you're recruiting. HBCUs all around the country, for example, making sure that you're going to other military bases, but looking at affinity groups from other diverse areas.
Well, isn't the department doing that, or is it not?
They're doing elements of it, I think, but it's a bit of a fits and starts sort of thing. I think your commitment can't just be one guy or several, and I know that they've expanded somewhat what those efforts are. It needs to be sustained. It needs to be consistent. And importantly, it needs to be part of what the Board of Police Commissioners is asking. We meet once per month as a Board of Police Commissioners. So basically, as much as any of your neighborhood garden clubs meet, we meet. And for several hours, we talk about things. But I don't know if there are enough questions where we're saying, Chief so-and-so, we are judging you on your ability to make sure that you are diversifying the department, that you are representing the best of Kansas City in terms of what we're doing. We can't just fall back on, you know, law enforcement officers are heroic and all of that, and therefore no questions can be asked. We have to do better, and I think right now we have not been pushing them enough to do that.
But in fairness, other cities around the country have very much the same issue, and that begins to suggest that, you know, decades-long attitudes from the African-American community directed at police might be at play here?
You know, I think, of course, there is some impact of decades-long views on policing and interactions with communities. That said, I think there are some departments that are doing very good jobs of attracting a diverse workforce. Miami, for example, does a strong job on that recruiting side. The Los Angeles Police Department, which itself has quite an interesting history, has a very diverse department, one of the more diverse departments in the country. It is not impossible to change the way these things are, and I think it's something that we need to make sure we're looking at. But back on the DOJ investigation, let me know, first of all, it is a very big deal that they're looking at us. I believe during the Biden administration, they have only launched one of these investigations of the Minneapolis Police Department, and then there's Kansas City. So this is not the sort of thing that should just be blown off with one press statement, and then it just goes away for a while. It's a big deal.
You know, Gwen Grant, who runs the Urban League, told KCUR the other day that she hopes that this investigation ultimately is broadened, Mayor, to include what she called patterns of excessive and deadly force. Should this investigation be broadened? And if so, will you ask the Department of Justice to do that?
I think right now I'm comfortable with the extent of the investigation. But I will say this. We have reported a lot publicly in terms of lawsuit settlements for excessive force. There's been a conviction, a criminal conviction in connection with it. I think what I, as a member of the public and also a member of the police board, want to see is what is the follow-up to make sure some of these things don't happen again. Too much of what we say in policing in Kansas City and certainly elsewhere is, all right, maybe there was a mistake, maybe there wasn't, but just trust us. Trust us that we are doing better. I don't know if that's enough. And in other areas of City Hall, of course, you see us make changes. We need to start seeing that same progression at the police department. And what I'd like to see out of this investigation is, frankly, what you see at any college campus. When the NCAA investigates you, usually the university does its own internal investigation and then reports their findings to the NCAA. That's the model we should use. I fear that is not the model that the Board of Police Commissioners majority will adopt.
Is there any interest outside of yourself in doing exactly what you just said?
I absolutely do not believe so. I would have liked to have. We actually had a board meeting earlier this week in connection with the police chief search. I think we will have another board meeting on Tuesday. I think there is nothing wrong with us having that robust discussion. And frankly, if we aren't going to just think that the state control system is a farce, we need to actually have these discussions. Us not doing so, I think, continues to indict this system as one that does not listen to the interests of the people of Kansas City.
You know, one final point here on this Department of Justice probe. One likely outcome of an investigation like this is a consent decree. Mayor, what is a consent decree and what are you anticipating will be the outcome of this whole thing?
A consent decree is a settlement between the Department of Justice and a police department, and typically a city, to make sure that they're following best practices. That might be expanding your recruiting, might be having more whistleblower protections for officers who are reporting misconduct. And then those rules have to be followed. A judge, a federal judge, would typically oversee compliance with it. Sometimes you'll have a monitor, someone who's an upstanding lawyer in the community who oversees it. For this investigation, I think it is a bit too early to tell in terms of what will happen, but that's why I push this approach. There is nothing to keep us from investigating ourselves, saying, where can we do better? There is no harm in saying that we need to build better trust. And you know, here's what I would say to some who may be more on the conservative policing side of things. Our officers who have reported concerns are 20-year, 25-year veterans. These are not activists from off the street. These are folks who have given their career to policing and public safety in Kansas City who are saying something is seriously broken and concerning. We need to listen to them and do that work.
Kansas City Mayor Quentin Lucas is my guest. Let's turn to homelessness. Mayor, yesterday you announced a comprehensive plan to end homelessness in Kansas City through something called Zero KC. Tell us about it.
Zero KC is an initiative of a number of different programs, some of which exist now, some don't, that will look to address homelessness in a way different than what we've seen in the past. In our city and many American cities, usually for homelessness, you're just moving people from one area to another. That is the encampment enclosure. That's the typical practice of shuffling folks around. We realized that that wasn't enough. So a few things that we're doing. building more low-barrier shelter opportunities. As you may be aware, there's a $50 million bond question on housing. We plan to dedicate 10% of that to homelessness. And so that would be $5 million in the next several years to make sure that we're building more opportunities for folks who are coming off the streets. Another part of it is making sure we provide wraparound services. So often when you just put people somewhere but give them no access to counseling, no access to substance abuse treatment, no access to how to find a job, you're not doing enough. So those are some of the steps. And then a final one, at least I'll mention now, is Cleanup KC as a part of it. Our Public Works Department is hiring more folks who are unhoused to do work, helping us pick up the streets, helping us on snow plowing eventually, making sure that the city, which has thousands of jobs, can be a good job provider for those who find themselves without a job position and often without a home.
You know, this plan sounds like an important step, but this week on the show, we had a long conversation about this issue. And the bottom line from that conversation was that, hey, we're heading into winter 22. We're almost in exactly the same place we were a year ago, and it's going to be a tough winter, at least when it comes to our homeless. Here's what you said about the road ahead on this issue 2 days before Christmas just last year.
I am confident that the interventions that we have made, the purchase of a hotel for families and single women, the purchase of another hotel for men, our relationship now with shelters and saying that you can't screen people out if they've been in trouble before, our holistic treatment of people to try to get them resources and services and ultimately jobs, this is change.
So we're talking about important change here, but yet the bottom line from this conversation, as I said, is we're no better shape right now than we were a year ago.
You know, I would say I think we are in a better shape than we were a year ago. That you recognize that our hotel programs, which I thought were responsible interventions in years past, are not necessarily what we're doing now. We're trying to look at more lasting partners. The issue in 2020 was really when the first tough winter came with COVID-19 as part of it, and we were kind of stuck scrambling. You saw Bartle Hall as an intervention. You saw us getting more hotel rooms. What you did not see were the connections with services. You did not see the opportunities with jobs, and you did not see, I think, the same level of regional communication that we have built up now. We recognize in Kansas City proper, although lots of people come from different parts of our region, that this does become a regional issue. We've expanded those conversations to make sure that this is something that is sustained and addressed, and importantly, isn't just answered by throwing money at some hotel rooms and saying, we got you somewhere to stay.
And you're talking about broadening the conversation to what, suburban areas?
Yes, absolutely.
Are you getting cooperation in those conversations?
We are getting cooperation, at least from continuum of care, so homelessness advocates in the suburbs. I continue to push mayors to be a part of it. As I have said before, I've walked encampments and talk to people from Overland Park, Olathe, Independence. Homelessness and the issues that contribute to it aren't just a Kansas City, Missouri issue. And so we are looking to build better cooperation there. I actually thank the state of Kansas, that Governor Kelly's administration and others have been helpful in making sure that we can have those social services, dialogues, and cooperation. I do not think, however, the Missouri legislature, which I think has continued to pass more bills that are about criminalizing homelessness than allowing us to actually address the root causes.
You know, we've had extensive correspondence with a resident in Kansas City regarding the handling of the homeless population down in the Watts Mill neighborhood near 103rd and Warnell, saying some of the homeless individuals are creating a dangerous environment for business owners and residents, illegal fires, physical altercations, and generally just leaving a mess, Mayor. He shared his correspondence with you, your staff, and city council members over the course of several months. He says the city is all talk and no action. This week on the show, Josh Henges, the city's homelessness coordinator, said Kansas City is probably still 10 years behind where we need to be on this issue. What's your response to what Josh said and the concerns of the business owner?
I absolutely understand any concerns of business owners all around town. I would think particularly even in Watts Mill, you have seen us address a number of issues. We've done parks cleanups. We've done outreach to those populations. We have not ignored them. The problem just is that it doesn't just disappear the first time you engage with and interact with folks. And I think that there are some in our community who want us to address this problem like we did in the 1980s or before, which was you move a bunch of people. If they don't move, you throw them all in jail, and you hope it just goes away that way. This is a different time. I don't think those types of approaches worked back then, frankly, and they absolutely don't work today. We are working to make sure that the folks that are presenting as homeless in Watts Mill or wherever they are know that there is a path for services, that there's another way of life. We do not want them on the streets or living in parks either, and we're trying to create permanent opportunities for it. In terms of what Mr. Hinch has said, I don't think that's incorrect, that Kansas City, and I'm not going to pick on my predecessors or Kansas City, local government really hasn't done housing well, if at all, particularly for the extremely low income for years. We have left that to be a federal issue, sometimes a state issue. I think cities are now faced in the 2020s of saying, we got to find a way to do it. That's why you're seeing a housing trust fund bond. That's why you're seeing us do more with homelessness than has ever been done in the history of Kansas City.
So just as we leave this topic, are there roadblocks still when it comes to funding this and getting the resources needed to take care of this issue?
There are absolutely roadblocks. Every year, Kansas City receives roughly about $8.5 million of federal funding from HUD to address housing writ large. That is folks leaving abusive relationships, homelessness, median income housing. That's what we got. And so it is not the sort of thing that cities are largely equipped to do. That's why you have seen so many struggle. What we are trying to do now is build a whole new ecosystem of housing. I know when you were covered in the Star, our housing approach usually meant how we were building a few East Side houses, often at incredibly inflated values, and selling them for a low price. We're trying to do a lot more now to address the homelessness issue, extremely low income, recognizing that the city's just about the only player that can help make change there.
Let's turn to the airport, the new terminal, Mayor. Next April, Kansas City's hosting the NFL draft in late April. Will the new airport terminal be open in time to accommodate that event?
Well, the new airport terminal will be open in time, and I promise you that because I'm on the ballot around that time, too. So we'll make sure everything gets done and is all spiffied
nothing
up.
Nothing like a frank acknowledgement.
Absolutely.
There, yeah.
But no, we are proud of the progress on it. I mean, I have read lots of stories about alleged problems at the airport, whether it was airport concessions, construction. We all remember, including questions I had on actually the original procurement. I'm proud of the work that we've done. It will be ready. The region will be incredibly proud of it. And I think it's a sign of the good work that local government can do.
What are we going to name it?
That's a fine question. Some people are suggesting Harry Truman. Some have suggested Sly James. I think we are going to just open it up as the new KCI terminal and then let the years go by and see if we want to name it after someone great like Steve Kraske or anyone else in the region.
Do we need to name it?
I don't think we do. And in fact, you've seen a trend away from naming airports. I think there has been some debate about, is there someone for whom we want to name it that represents the region? For me right now, I think Kansas City International works. Kansas City is a growing brand with the World Cup and so many other items. I think, it's okay just being KCI.
Let's go to downtown baseball. The other day, John Sherman, the owner of the Royals, was talking about the possibility of playing in a new downtown ballpark, maybe as early as 2026, Mayor, 4 years from now. Is that possible?
I think anything is possible with enough money. The question just is, where does the money come from? I am certain that if Mr. Sherman wants to write a billion and a half dollar check to try to get something like that done, it could. If there are questions as to public expenditures, that might be slowed down just a bit. But I recognize that there is great interest in a new downtown ballpark among some in our community, particularly our real estate community. My view as mayor of Kansas City is, one, to protect the taxpayers. Second, to make sure that any type of move makes sense, not just for downtown, but also for my friends in East Kansas City, where the stadiums are now.
Just a bottom line question. Can you say today, is a downtown baseball park going to happen?
I would never mislead you, Steve, and I think that a downtown baseball park is likely to happen in the next 10 years. Maybe not the next four, maybe not the next five. I think in the next generation you will see downtown baseball.
Will it be in the East Village, down near City Hall? Is it going to be over by 18th and Vine? Where are we going here?
I also think if I were predicting today, I would suggest that it's probably the East Village. I know there have been talks about 18th and Vine. I think there's a bigger land acquisition question. There are actually things around 18th and Vine, like the ATA, like the Kansas City School District. The East Village, for better or worse, east of City Hall, if any of you ever see it, is a lot of empty parking lots.
The city manager, Brian Platt, expressed some frustration the other day, saying the Royals aren't engaging in regular communications with city officials about this new ballpark. John Sherman seemed surprised by that statement when he was asked about it the other day. How would you describe the level of communication?
I think that the Royals do talk to us. I haven't had a conversation on baseball for a while, but what we are most interested in is if there is a plan, what does the financing look like? What does a cost look like? What can we share more broadly with the public? To me, we have to kind of get beyond at a certain point, just saying, yeah, we'd like downtown baseball. That chat has been kicking around for a while now. What's that next step? What's the cost? Where would it be? How do you get it done?
You tweeted the other day on a different issue that you were considering removing parking requirements for restaurants and retail, Mayor. Tell us more about that. What are the current requirements in place? What do you want to do?
So anybody who walks around certain parts of our city will see lots of surface parking lots. And frankly, it makes it harder to walk around and traverse our cities. I also, as a councilman, as a member of the Board of Zoning Adjustment years ago, and as a mayor, talk to restaurateurs or those who have small shops all the time who say, I can't figure out where to get the 18 parking spots required if I'm building something, let's say, in Waldo. I think that progressive cities, and indeed right now the entire state of California, are looking at removing minimum parking requirements, allowing businesses to decide for themselves. If you have, for example, a good restaurant concept and you think people are willing to walk to it in Crestwood or Waldo or Brookside or anywhere, why do we need to actually force you to have all those spots? It adds an incredible cost. It makes it so this is always going to be a city that requires, I think, excessive parking, and it really limits development and creativity. I'd like to see us take a different approach. I think it's not just a progressive approach. It's also something that will help us build up our city and our investments in a lot of our commercial districts.
So it would discourage surface parking lots then?
I think it would certainly not encourage surface parking lots.
Let's go to some phone calls here from Mayor Q. Al from downtown Kansas City. Al, you're on with Mayor Lucas. Good morning.
Good morning. Just as a starter, Mayor Lucas, progress has been made since you've been in office. That's great. Thank you for everything that you're trying to do. However, the last week, I live downtown in what is basically the library district. And for the past week, they've been resurfacing Main Street down here, starting at 11 o'clock at night till about 3 in the morning. And it's noisy work. And since streets are now a big issue around town, there's so much being worked on. I just don't understand why, now that we're not technically classified as a residential neighborhood still, that's being worked on, but we are a residential neighborhood. There are roughly 3,000 people living down here. And for the past week, you've literally been up all night with street resurfacing.
Let me get the mayor to comment here. It sounds like it's noisy down there.
Well, you know, sometimes people ask me, what's the joy of being a mayor as compared to a congressperson or a senator? It is because you get the most hyper-local of local issues. Mm-hmm. And I recognize that concern, and I have heard about that actually already this week. I have talked to the city manager about how we can best do construction at those times, or pardon me, at different times. We are working on that, and we're working on that everywhere. But I will note, we have made a huge concerted effort to address resurfacing and street resurfacing so that Kansas Cityans are seeing better streets in ways that they have not seen in generations. I recognize, though, there are some adverse consequences that we're working to make sure we address.
But repaving during the day has its own issues, I'm sure.
It absolutely does, and traffic and danger issues. So we will try to balance it as best we can, but this is part of our dedication to resurfacing hundreds of lane miles a year, including those downtown.
Amanda from Kansas City, Missouri. Amanda, good morning.
Good morning. It's Amanda, Mayor Q. I just want to say thank you. You have really stepped up to the plate on the issue of homelessness. You've really taken the initiative and you've gone places with it. As someone who's been homeless in Kansas City, thank you.
Well, thank you. And we're proud to do it. We know we have more to do.
Brian from Kansas City, Missouri. Brian, you're on the air.
Hi there.
Hi.
How you doing, Mayor Lucas?
I'm great.
Hey, this is Brian Hand. I'm calling you, asking you why you block so many constituents on social media, like myself, and refuse to give reasoning for it. You said racist terms and threats, and I never did those things. Could you tell me why you blocked me and others?
Well, I always appreciate talking to Brian, who's still able to communicate with me here in the public square, so that speaks to it. I do think anything that relates to bullying, profane comments, all that sort of stuff, which really built up during the COVID-19 pandemic, is something that's unacceptable. And I'm one who certainly enjoys a good set of public discussions. However, I think that it's fair to say things have become a bit more toxic. I don't think I need to moderate a forum for that toxicity.
Mayor, some Twitter questions we got for you. Patty wants to know, why are buildings allowed to be vacant or deteriorating? So many structures, she writes, even in City Market, some really historic, are being allowed to fall apart.
You know, that is a problem fundamentally with property rights and how we don't enforce, I think, enough things. In the city, we do have codes that need to be kept up. However, what happens all the time is that somebody fixes up something just enough to avoid having action taken by the city. Something that we have explored is a vacant land tax. Not quite the issue you're talking about, but a lot of these vacant lots contribute to our problems with weeds, any number of other issues. Doing that to try to encourage people to do more with their land is something Kansas City government's evaluating.
Jeremy writes us this, Mayor, what can be done at the local level to protect large investment groups from buying entire neighborhoods just to jack up rent?
You know, at the state legislative level, we actually, one of the few things we've been able to get passed from the city's perspective is more protection for those who are smaller landowners, not allowing the huge speculative investment. But that is almost as old as the country is. Speculators trying to buy up real estate. A lot of it happening with Airbnbs and short-term rentals now. A big part of discussions in the years ahead, how that's changing neighborhoods, how you're seeing more parties, how it's crowding out folks who are just trying to buy in regular city neighborhoods.
Jess on Twitter writes us this, appreciate the broad interview. As a historic Northeast Kansas City resident, I feel like there has been improvement with homelessness and love the investments in Kessler Park. Then she adds, a big long-time concerns of mine include prioritizing car-free transport and housing density. What's the vision there?
Well, the vision there is what we've discussed so far today. Trying to make sure that we have a city where you can get around without an automobile is important. Cars are just incredibly expensive if we ever think about it. I have one, so I'm not saying abolish cars or anything like that, but what we need to do is build a city that is more accessible for folks who are not driving, more accessible for those of all different ability levels. And so that is something that we continue to look at in every new development. We have new development ideas in the West Bottoms and the Riverfront. You're seeing the Women's Soccer Stadium and beyond. All of those areas, we're looking to do more. And in the neighborhoods that have existed in the city, like the historic Northeast, I think you're seeing us do a better job of making sure intersections are safer, making sure we're improving sidewalks. So this is a city that a pedestrian can appreciate as well.
Final question from Twitter. Mayor Emily writes, how can we make the term affordable housing actually mean affordable housing when wages are stagnant, the people can't afford rent anywhere?
You know, we could have a whole interview on affordable or attainable housing. As I see it, it's this. It is building housing that's between those, for those making between $0 a year and those who have workforce incomes of roughly $41,000, $45,000. We need to make sure we're a city that's addressing homelessness and the extremely low income, as we've discussed, but we also need to make sure this is a city that is not crowding out the middle class. We continue to see lots of folks move to the suburbs because we have that missing middle. I don't want us to be a San Francisco, a Denver long term. So for us, that is producing more product, getting the private sector to be a part of it, which I know leads to some controversy, but that's the way that we're going to balance it. Good government investment, $50 million housing trust fund, probably more later, and then talking about how incentives help fill at least some piece of it for those at the median income level.
That's Mayor Quentin Lucas. Mayor, always appreciate your time.
Thanks
for stopping by today.
Thank you. Good to be with you.
Up to Date is a production of KCUR 89.3. Our theme music was composed by the great Bobby Watson. The program is produced by Danny Alexander, Zach Wilson, Elizabeth Ruiz, and Reginald David. Our engineer is Paul Nakatura. I'm Steve Kraske. Thanks for listening.